I thought I had a sound podcast.
So Thor, when did you start Fish Prince as a label?
2018.
2018, yeah.
I want to say May. I believe that was when the first release came out, was in May 2018. But it's an interesting story to how it actually started. I was working for a few years with a blog or label slash blog slash called I Heart Noise, and I was basically running the label and with suggestions on what to release, who to release, how to release it, and I approached I Heart Noise with the possibility of releasing a band called Nellories, releasing their demo, and it didn't quite fit in to what I Heart Noise was doing, and I kind of started the label just for this one EP. I decided to do a pressing of this EP reissue, this lost cassette only demo from a high school era group from Nara, Japan. But that is really how it started. And I was going to follow a reissue label sort of trajectory. That was my intention, at least the very beginning, was to have it be a reissue label. And I was going to contact all the artists that I loved and reissue something by them. And that's how Fish Prince started. And obviously it didn't go that way. entirely. My second release was a tape by Cryostation, which was a brand new EP at the time. So I kind of broke my own rule with 002. but that's yeah, 2018, and as a reissue label, just for starters, that was what the plan was.
Yeah, that Nowry's EP is really interesting. it really is. Like
it's
can't...
so fantastic. It's like, to me, that band, you know, they share a kinship with someone like the Muppet Giants to me, in a way that, like, they both, obviously aesthetically, you know, they both use accordions as lead instruments. They both have sort of the surfy guitar going along with it, and the rudimentary drums from a drum machine or not. But it, also in the lyrics, the Muppet Giants are very, they're abstract. They're not Dadaist, but abstract, I would say. And so sort of the lyrics of the Nellerys. But it's just astounding. They recorded that EP. It was a demo. That was before they got signed. And they were 15, 16 when that material was recorded and written. And it was for a high school project. So it was an assignment. I had no idea that it had this history. I just thought it, I'd heard of the band through their studio albums released on EMI in Japan. And I just saw the EP on Discogs one day, and that was my alerting to its existence. And there was a copy up, and it was for a ridiculously large amount of money. And I picked it up. and I just, think, this really, needs to be out. And that's part of how Fishprints started.
Right.
But yeah, that EP is wild. The guitar lines and the accordion lines. It's just like astounding to me that it's these high school students turning in an assignment.
Right. No, but it really is like nothing else that I've heard. And I mean, that's how I would maybe describe They Might Be Giants' early material as well.
Sure.
Just without sort of a precedent. And it is really incredible that they made an album like that without sort of a conscious plan to, launch a career. It does sound like something that you would make to like send to an indie label to like show off what you can do. Like it is
right.
sort of a perfect demo in that respect.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, it's extremely cool that you found that, and that you not only sort of followed that album down the rabbit hole and, allowed it into your life and became, a fan of the band, but also reached out to them and got them to allow you issue it on your label. That's fantastic.
That was the wildest thing, because here's a band that I, at that time in 2018, I definitely viewed a lot of music and just music in general as, I still had that sort of God thing going on with it. Like, the band on the major label. Oh, they're untouchable. and separating, music made by your friends versus music made in the studio by, and I don't really see that separation anymore. Not these days, but, yeah, back then, to get a response even from one of the members was just a wild experience altogether. And that she was even interested in doing it was even wilder, And she got pretty excited about it. She sent me like the original, pictures of the very original packaging that they actually submitted it in. It's in this large envelope that they screen printed. And they had inserts in it. And, she asked, did your copy come with that? And I was like, no.
Yeah, those inserts tend to get lost.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just got the, you know, the cassette, but it is, it's a really cool item. It is actually the J-Cardist construction paper, and what appears, I don't know how they actually printed on this construction paper, but maybe it's a stencil or something, but it is very, you know, very homemade. And there's a little drawing on the cassette itself in silver Sharpie. Very, just a cool item. Yeah, and I remember that was, you know, that release also kind of solidified the whole, I try to do it as much as I can now, not so much lately, but is the Fish Prince button or Fish Prince badge, which most of the early releases came with a badge or a button on by default. And this one had two badges. And I got an artist to actually make something out of that, the logo on the spine of the J card. And one of the other buttons was a detail of some of that packaging that June, the accordion player and the singer, sent me from the envelopes. So, you know, it's a really special release for me. I hold that one very, very dear. This is the first, you know, so it's always kind of the baby release of Fish Prince. So it's, but getting back to what I was saying, you know, that it's cool that that's one thing that Fish Prince is very adamant about, is always getting the artists involved. And I don't mean just a license. You know, you can go to an artist label, you can buy a license, and you can release stuff without the artist knowing about it. Apparently they're getting paid, you know, by their labels. But you know, you can do that. You can buy a license. You can have a certain amount of copies available for a certain amount of time. I'm not going to lie, some releases were done that way on Fish Prince. Not many, though. I think like two or three. But other than that, the very vast majority on Fish Prince is the artists are 100% involved with everything from the time I ask the artist whether they want to release with me or not, from that point up to release, up to promotion, up to just infinite, they're involved. And it really does, to me, it helps for a better product overall. And it really pushed me to be more professional about my layouts, and it pushed me to be more professional about how I credited things, how I distributed things, how I worded things.
Yeah, part of what distinguishes Fish Prince maybe from other tape labels, and what you've sort of touched on here, is that it seems like you kind of take like a personal, like you make a personal investment in every tape that you sell, in some way, that there is like a uniqueness to it.
Well, I guess if, you know, there is a common thread, it's that all those releases, I can sing them for you. You know, from front to back, you know, they really are records that I truly do, like personally adore. And that's the basic goal of Fish Prince, is to get some music that really catches my ear. I, you know, notice that either it's unsigned or, you know, or I feel like it has to be heard by a wider audience. I know that's kind of, selfish, but it, you know, it is driven by the, you know, that's an obvious umbrella, is my head and my brain doing this label. but every release, it's I really have to personally get behind it, or else it's, you know, that I can only imagine that stuff that you're not completely behind, it's probably harder to promote. You know, probably harder to get the word out if, you know, you're just sort of like, yeah, I'm releasing this thing that someone asked me to release, and I have room in my schedule, so I'm going to put it out. I know some labels work that way, and that's fine. And even for me, that's a they serve a function, you know, and that is even having a wider roster, even having, you know, putting out things every week or twice a week, or, you know, digital net labels, that's all very functional to the music community, not just genre communities. And yeah, I can't release it if I am not in love with it. That's just really kind of the way it is.
Yeah, I've noticed that that in addition to these very cool tapes that you release, you also tend to, I mean, depending on the release, release these albums as mini discs too. Which, how did that start? Like, how did you realize that people, that this was something that somebody who's interested in your label would want?
I didn't. I had seen some labels around issuing stuff on mini disc, and my brain just went right to Fish Prints. It just said, it was just like, okay, if they can release stuff on mini disc, if there are mini discs around, because I loved mini disc when I was younger. In college, that was my first sort of experience with a mini disc, was in college at the college radio station, where we had our bumpers on mini disc. That's what we use it for. We're just the bumpers and the ads and the PSAs. And, in college, I obviously took that further. I wanted to make mini discs for my bumpers, and I wanted to make, you know, things for my radio shows. So actually, that's when I got a mini disc deck, was in college. And, you know, we used to do what they call vinyl rips now. We used to record LPs that didn't have a digital counterpart to mini disc. but seeing other labels actually release on mini disc, it just said, oh, you can still get those. You can still make those. You can still sell mini discs. And I was just like, okay, I really love the format. And I'm going to release some stuff on mini disc. It's really that's how that went. It's pretty simple, actually. But the mini disc, the thing about the mini discs is, they are, I don't know how much you know about the format, but,
not super familiar. I've never actually listened to something on a mini disc.
It's the coolest sound, because what you're getting, what it actually is a compression. It's pre MP3 compression called ATRAC, ATRAC. And that is the format that MiniDisc records and reads and writes, you know, reading ATRAC, writing ATRAC. But to me, it doesn't sound compressed at all. In fact, it sounds like when you play a really nice brand new vinyl record on a really nice turntable, really nice speakers, except there's no danger of hearing any surface noise. It's wild. it's such a warm sound for digital and for technically a compressed format. Pretty amazing.
Okay, looking at some of the mini discs that you've sold for releases in the past, specifically on, I'm on your listing for After Dinner.
Thank you.
this, yeah, souvenir cassette. And I'm seeing that under the mini disc, it says that it's hand stickered, numbered, and dubbed. Okay, so those mini discs you were burning yourself.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Okay. Actually, wow.
They're right from my laptop. I use a virtual machine running a Windows XP, and I run the proprietary Sony software through that VM, and that's how I record and dub the discs. You know, the stickers, that's just, I was trying to find a way to provide packaging for them, and, you know, the old mini discs that you would get at the stores, you know, Sony, they had these great, like, kind of larger, oversized four mini disc packaging, this big plastic case, and I just didn't see those around. And I figured, you know, with these cases that came with the blank mini discs, there was room to, you know, they have a place where you can put in a label and put in, but I just decided to go the sticker route, to stick something nice on the top and then the back of it and on the disc itself. Yeah, yeah, it's all done at home. All of it. I have a paper cutter, just an X-Acto paper cutter, and I cut everything by hand. It's probably very evident to some people, but I try to be as neat as possible about it. The newest ones, of course, are the best looking ones because I've actually sort of picked up a rhythm on how to cut them. But that souvenir cassette, that was one of the first mini discs I released, or at least in that format. It was one of the, I can't recall what the actual, oh yeah, okay, so it's, I'm sorry, I'm looking at this, it's, oh, well, okay, look, catalog number is 006 for the Handmade, so not the first, but it was an early one, and that is, it's weird, like, when you go to, like, a site like Discogs and see how many people want that mini disc, it's just like, okay, because I made 10 of them, you know, and neither of us, nor Paco, or From After Dinner, or I, you know, really expected anything. We were just like, I'm like, I make mini discs, Paco. Do you want a mini disc of Souvenir Cassette? She said, does anyone even listen to mini discs anymore? Does anyone even buy them? And I said, well, the last few releases sold. She said, okay, yeah, let's do an edition on mini disc. That sounds like a great idea. Yeah, that she was very pleased with how that all came out. That was that's also just dream release of mine, was the After Dinner. Do you know about Souvenir Cassette, and do you know anything about that release?
I've listened to it a couple of times, but I'd like you to tell me what attracted you to that release and why you felt like it was a good match for Fish Prince.
Okay, so I found out about After Dinner in a mail order catalog for progressive art, rock, art, pop, art, music called Wayside Music. They're still around. They run the label Cuneiform as well. And in their catalog, in their print catalog for CD mail order, they had a monthly $5 CD, just like a loss leader, you know, something to smooth. And one month, the $5 CD was After Dinner. And they had a description that was just everything I wanted at that time. They said it was Bjork and Kate Bush with a dash of Dagmar Krause. Now, if you're going to compare someone's voice to Dagmar Krause, at least according to me, you know, you it's a certain kind of delivery. It's a certain type of character. And for that name to be a buzzword on this CD, you know, also being an absolutely gigantic Henry Cow fan, gigantic Slap Happy fan. So to see, you know, someone compared to these more mainstream artists and then like, oh, well, you know, she kind of sounds like Dagmar Krause. It's like, oh, you're hitting my favorite here. I'm going to buy this $5 CD. So I did. And, I heard magic coming out of my speakers. That record is one of the best headphone records in the world ever. I guarantee you. It's also released under the title Glass Tube. And the CD is also called Editions, but they all have kind of the same material. And it is just the engineering on that record, I still haven't heard anything that really touches it in its meticulousness. Okay, to Souvenir Cassette. Souvenir Cassette was originally issued in 1988, and it was a live cassette, and it was kind of a mythical after dinner release. Like, ooh, you know, they released this cassette. This was back, I first heard about this in maybe the year 2000, so 1999 or 2000. So cassettes were very much not a part of what was going on in the general music world. And so I was just, oh, they released this live cassette. Oh, it's all them live. I need it. And it was something I kept missing to get in my travels. Like, I would see copies of it up online, and when I would go in and pick it up, it would be gone. Or they were too expensive. And so it was just this elusive thing. And so I contacted the label that put it out, which was RER Recommended. And the owner of that label supplied a cassette, an unplayed cassette that went back and forth across the seas a few times. We were trying to get it mastered, or remastered, you know. And, I said, oh, I can do it. I can do it. I can do this. I can do this. And I went to one of those, like, Precious Memories, you know, put your stuff on CD, get a digital copy. And I went to one of those places very naively with this tape. And I'm like, this is the only one in the world. And they were like, well, we hear that all the time. And I'm like, no. Like, this has to go back to England. Like, mm-hmm. This has to be scot-free, you know. And of course, they gave it back to me with stickers all over it. So I was just like, okay. but their mastering was obviously terrible. Because it was just, you know, it is transfer service, you know, it wasn't mm-hmm. really just, it was straight up transfer.
There was no care and involved.
Not at all. No, no. And so I went back to, RER, to Chris, the label owner, and he said that, oh, my guy can handle it. Don't worry about it. And his guy is Bob Drake, who is sort of a stalwart on the Recommended label and in a few rock and opposition bands. And he just does really nice mastering and remastering. And I feel like that Bob really just went to town with this tape and made sure it sounded the best it could. And just having heard the original source, you know, and even with all its splices and sort of, you know, cuts, and it's just a very smooth remastering job. And I couldn't have done that without the other label, that is, you know, collaborating with labels too, you know. But that Souvenir Cassette, I mean, it after dinner, just one of my all-time favorites. And the mythical Souvenir Cassette, it was just an idea, came in my head. Oh, why don't I ask the label if I can reissue it, you know? And that's, I forget if, yeah, I actually tried to get in touch with Hako, the, you know, after dinner band leader. And that's when she was all in for it. And she was helping me with the layout. She was helping me. I mean, it was painful because she's a perfectionist. So, you know, here I am, kind of green, you know, putting together a tape layout. I wanted to make sure it looked just like the original tape. And my scans had some dots and some, you know, dust, and that I didn't see. And I'm just, you know, she's sending me back. This must have been like 12 or 13 times. She sent me back artwork and had like little things circled. You missed this. You missed this. You missed this. You missed this. And it was maddening at the time, but what we got out of that perfectionism and attention to detail was a product that looked absolutely incredible and sounded incredible. So, yay for artist collaboration, for sure. You know?
At least you still have a relationship with Hako too. I noticed that she's one of two artists who you list as the signed artist to Fish Prints on Bandcamp.
Yeah, she really pushed me in that professional direction. She was like, you need a Bandcamp label page. she was the first artist I linked that way. And yeah, we still talk. She's very busy. She got signed to a label called Room 40 in between Souvenir Cassette reissue and now. And Room 40 is just, I'm so glad to see her on that label because it's perfect for her and what she's doing now. It is like, I mean, she, you know, like anyone on Fish Prince, I just, you know, they deserve, or, you know, a much wider audience than I'm seeing. And for her to be signed to Room 40, it just, like, I kind of, like, sighed in relief. I was like, oh, she found a really good one. You know, Lawrence English runs that. He ran a label called Line back in the 2000s, 1990s, which was minimal electronic sort of sound art stuff, limited editions. And, yeah, she's perfect for them. And they brought her to Australia recently and took her on, they let her go on tour in Australia, which I think that's so fantastic, that she's able to do that she's able to get her work out there on a larger plane like that. It's great to see.
I find it interesting that Hako is the reason that you have a Bandcamp page, when I feel like a label like yours, Bandcamp is a really good resource for and would be sort of a natural platform for you. What was the plan for selling your tapes and, you know, other materials before you had a Bandcamp?
Well, I'm sorry. That was, I think, a misunderstanding. She got me to get a Bandcamp. She got me to get a Bandcamp Pro account.
Oh, okay.
She's like, you need to upgrade to a real label account. And I was like, okay, maybe I do. I have my label account still.
Okay.
That's because of, yeah, that's all. But just to, you know, maybe kind of answer your question, it's always been on Bandcamp since day one, Fish Prince. And Bandcamp is a fantastic platform for someone like me running this operation, you know, especially recently, because I'm not going to be able to do a lot of pro press product and just financial setbacks. So it's good because, you know, the digital format, Bandcamp, that's going to allow me to still help people get some work out there. It's just having that platform to release digital things. And I mean, I'm still planning on doing mini discs, still planning on doing anything that's handmade or DIY. So if I can find a deck, maybe some tapes will come out. For right now, it's just like, it's kind of had to be scaled back, which is a bit disappointing. But I'm working towards making it work again. And that's going to be one thing I am doing now, is a distribution of other people's records. And the first one I'm doing is distributing Cryostasian's new record. That's going to be on his label, and I'm going to be doing the mail order for that. So, and providing the digital through Fish Prints again, just one shipped, one change. But there was a few months there where I didn't think that I was going to be able to do it anymore. And, people want real tapes. People want real tapes. People want real CDs. People want real this, real that. You know, I can't do that. Oh, so this has to be put away. And it doesn't have to be like that. There's definitely other ways of doing it that are within my means. So,
like the mini discs. Yeah.
With the mini discs. It's funny because from my experience running the label, I feel that people wait for the mini discs to come out. I'll have digital, I'll have sometimes vinyl, I'll have CDs up, but people really tend to either they're waiting or having a mini disc format really helps to bring attention to the release. And there's a mini disc community that apparently I'm not that tapped into. But it is wild. I feel like the official, like, Fish Prince release is a mini disc, and then I can still do that is feels really good. One of the most fantastic things ever. And they take a lot of time, but it's nice to know that a product is going to come out the way that you have envisioned it and that you are building it and that you are putting it together and you are actually creating it. There's something that's to be said about that and DIY stuff versus, like, I mean, going and getting a pro job, which, like, you know, everything is, it's, you can get a tape like you would in the stores, and that's, and that is a really wonderful thing, and there's nothing quite like that, getting those stock boxes in with pro product. So hopefully one day I'll be able to do that again, but as for now, you know, the Fish Prince mini disc is a thing.
Right, yeah, it's kind of your leading product right now, other than digital.
Yeah, it's so funny how it turned out that way, but it did, you know, and it's just good that I can still provide that sort of stuff to the world, I should say.
Yeah, if you don't mind me asking, is the issue that you're having with the pro pressing sort of a macro one, or what's stopping you from pursuing
cassettes? It's a macro issue, you know.
Okay.
It's one of those things where the finances just aren't there like they used to be. And, you know, layoffs and what have you. It's just hopefully, you know, as I'm stating it now, it's like, oh, this could be a very temporary situation as of right now, as of the speaking, you know, it's just, I have to look at other ways to do this other than the mini discs, other than like ProPress CDRs, which are easier because you can sort of order those on order demand. Like someone can place an order and you can place an order for one disc, you know? So it's just, there's no real upfront costs.
Yeah, it's not because of backlogs or because you literally can't get an order in.
No, it really.
That's what I was wondering. Yeah.
No, which is good, isn't it? I mean, it's better that it's not due to some sort of business snafu.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that. In the meantime, you're still releasing cool stuff.
Well,
you're still
releasing
cool stuff. Yeah.
And I mean, honestly, this whole, you know, event is, you know, it's not the end of it. It's just finding the other avenues to do the same or similar things. And so far I've let, you know, people have come to Fish Prints in the meantime and like asked to put out stuff, and I kind of let them know where I'm at. You know, it's really cool. People seem to understand and want to just sort of wait it out with me. It's like, hey, that's cool. I totally expect people to I would even say, or I have said, you know, if you want to find another label, you know, then you certainly could. and people just, they really want to do it digitally, or they want to do something that's within my means, or help me get a product out, or like in Cryostasium's case, you know, he's financed the whole project and I'm doing the distributing. So people are helping out. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Right. And nobody who you're working with right now has like a sense of urgency for when you would release like a physical version of their work.
Not at the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, not at the moment. Yeah. No, the artists really seem to understand what's going on, which is very cool, you know. And they're where I would, you know, previously offered either a pro tape or CD or something like that. You know, we're just gonna either go digital or digital plus mini, or digital plus mini plus handmade CDR or something like that. You know, and I could always include, you know, one of the artists that is going to be releasing in the future asked for an art book, which I'm really excited to get my hands on making a reality. I think that's too cool. And that's within what I can do.
Have you released an art book with any of your any of the albums you put out so far? No.
No, I have not. This was the artist's idea, and then I'm all for it. You know, it's just another piece of the puzzle that can be presented and be enjoyed and taken in aesthetically. I love things like that. You know, I love inserts and art prints and art books and numbered prints. Yeah. I love stuff like that. I really love stuff like that as a collector. And sort of that sort of like specialness of a product that you you would get as handmade and all that good stuff.
Right. And getting your hands on a copy is like being part of like a special club, kind of.
I suppose, like you know.
There's like a personal connection there. Yeah, that formed.
Except my special club is for anyone that wants to listen. It's pretty cool. Right.
It's not an exclusive club, but.
I like that too. I like that the music exists or just exists out there and that anyone can take away from it what they want to. And I know that artists, myself included, like I don't really, there are some times where that doesn't match up, you know, where someone has an impression of what you're doing. And you want to just tell them like, no, that is not what I'm thinking in the slightest, you know, but people really need to have that interpretation of music and art and to be able to bring themselves to that and to be able to make of it what they will. You know, it's one of the cooler things that music has to offer is just that it really does resonate differently with absolutely everybody uniquely.
I mean, that is, I feel like it's sort of elevating the uniqueness of every release and the personality of the artist through that release is something that you really excel at. I'm not seeing any uniformity with your releases, and that is not an insult. I love that about your label. Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, that's I went into it without thinking of a genre tie, and it's still not genre tied. You know, it's really is just music that I am absolutely head over heels in love with and want to see out there, and no one else is putting it out there. So figure why not? You know, it's a cool thing to have that platform to offer to people.
Which of the artists who you've released music by was the most surprising to you? You know, as an artist who reached out to you and said, "Hey, we'd like you to release something." Which of these releases was most unexpected?
Unexpected. There were a lot of them. Unexpected. I'm trying to think of the one that was the most surprising to me. And even I have to look at my Bandcamp page to like remind myself of what has been put out because I put out a lot of people's stuff. I guess it happened early on. The most surprising release that I can say I was very surprised to hear that this person wanted to release with me was Barbara Morgenstern, Enter the Party Zone, which is a demo tape from Berlin, 1997, I believe. Maybe 96. I've been a fan of Barbara's. It was like After Dinner, you know, and like Nellery's, where I was familiar with her music before starting the label and sort of, you know, was in my whole line of reissue label, like, oh, I'm gonna put a reissue this demo, or I'm gonna ask to reissue this demo. But she was a long shot, mainly because of how I feel about her music. I personally think she is probably gonna hurt a lot of people here, but I think she's my favorite living songwriter. And when I reached out to her, I sort of had a tenuous connection with her in the past, just as a fan. And we'd emailed each other here and there over the years. And it was just really tenuous, not anything like crazy. Like, but just like, oh, hi, fan. Hi, Barbara. But I did, you know, I sent her an email and I said, hey, I don't know if you remember me, but I was at a show of yours about 10 years ago and we hung out. and I run a label now. Would you want to reissue your demo with me? And she was absolutely 100% enthusiastic about it, really into it. And actually from there, you know, said to me, I have a new album. Do you want to put that out too?
Wow.
So So from this, from the Enter the Party Zone reissue, I got to put out that album, Unschuld und Verwüstung, which is a mammoth record. That is, it's one of, I mean, not again, not to like single things out, but I just the craftsmanship on that record, the quality of recording, the quality of songwriting on that record is just, it's just above and beyond to me. And the fact that it's even on Fishprints is above, it's like above and beyond. And I can barely believe it. I own it on vinyl from the label that put it out in Germany. And, you know, it's something I spit on my turntable. It's, I put out the tape version. It's kind of cool. You know, but from there, I mean, Barbara and I, we're not close, but we're friends now, you know, and I actually, one of the releases on Fishprints is a remix album of that Barbara Morgenstern album, Unschuld und Verwüstung. It's called Innocence and Desolation, the Fishprints reworks. And I actually, she sent me all the multi-tracks for that entire record, every multi-track, every single stem from every single song. And I ended up remixing the entire album from those stems. And the rest of the tracks on that remix record are from friends / other artists on Fishprints, people who I asked if they wanted to take part in remixing a song of hers. And that's that one. And if you do go on the Fishprints Bandcamp, you'll see a few releases by her. And I also did a live cassette of hers as well. But that's a really good relationship to come out of working with somebody at Fishprints. I'm very sad about this, but I understand it. I was supposed to open for her in Berlin. I was supposed to go to Berlin. Really? Yeah, I was supposed to go in March of 2020. That's when I was supposed to go.
Yeah.
And that, obviously that was the start of the pandemic. So it was just, everything was canceled and the event was canceled, and I got my money back for the plane ticket, but it didn't get me to Berlin. Maybe someday, you know, maybe someday now it'll be a possibility. It was just, you know, everything was perfectly timed up at that point, and then just things hit. So I never did get to go, but hopefully one of these days I'll get to go to Berlin, hang out, play a few shows. I don't know. Something like that.
Yeah. I mean, there's still time. I mean, you've got the label. Absolutely. You're still making music. I think you very recently released something as Petri Dish. Yeah. Something in February, the exhibition on Europa. And then, you know, as Petri Dish, like, you're always releasing stuff.
I'm always just, it really is a thing of like, when the one record is finished, the next one, you know, I'll say, oh, that's going to be it for a while. That's it. I've said what I had to say in music, and I'm going to take a break. And, you know, it never works out that way, ever, ever, ever. It's always a few days later, a week later, you're already thinking about what to put together musically for your next concept or album or whatever. That's why I release so much.
Mm-hmm. I love that you're just always working and experimenting, and that's something that I really appreciate about your output, is that it doesn't ever feel like you are thinking about it necessarily as, you know, an album, but this is like the piece that you were inspired to create at you know, in the moment, and when it's done, and then you're moving on. Yeah,
that's right.
I think that's a really great way of putting your art out in the world, and not being weighed down by it either. Not being weighed down by your previous work as well.
It does. That's, you know, it's a helpful. It's I find it helpful to release stuff, you know, when it makes sense, because you can move on from that idea like easier. You know, you can just say, okay, well, I did that. Now it's time to do something hopefully completely different. Usually it doesn't happen quite like that, but sometimes you hit something. If you're releasing things all the time, you know, they're going to be, and you, when you look back, it's going to be like, yeah, okay, well, that one, you know, not you feel like it's not up to par. Some things are not up to par with other things, but that's what happens when you're just going with ideas. You know, it's I'm sure that if I wanted to really take my time with something, you know, I could probably come up with something fairly interesting, but I just don't work like that. I it's all very fast. You know, building the songs and recording them and composing them, they're all kind of the same thing. And it's almost like me going like, blah, 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 you know, just, but it sounds better. It sounds better than that. Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of spontaneity there. There's a lot of improvisation there too, you know, and what I do. But at the same time, like other elements of it are extremely composed. So it's hard to say, you know, it's whatever's driving the piece or the album or the music at the time is really kind of how you're going to go with it, you know. And it could be something that you're not used to, something that you're used to. But, you know, creation is I couldn't be without the creation, the music creation. It's definitely integral to myself, and my being is music creation. And yeah, just it's something I feel like I'm always going to be doing. It's something at whatever pace, you know, it's something that I'm not, even if I do decide to take a break at some point, you know, probably actually won't work out that way. Yeah. Although I did take a 10-year break at one point. Yes, for sure. Actually, that would be the period, like right before right after college and right before I started doing music with my brother. There's a 10-year gap because I was making electronic music on my 8-track, my Porta Studio, my Tascam cassette 8-track, doing sort of dark, industrial, sort of Throbbing Gristle-esque things. And then I heard Throbbing Gristle for like the first time when I was on a trip in New Orleans. And I decided to stop making music at that point because I was like, okay, well, these four people are doing what I want to do, except they did it in the 70s.
Oh, wow. Yeah, okay, so they kind of preempted you a little bit.
A little bit, yeah. Yeah, but I took that so personally, and I took that so hard, you know, just that it had been done, what I was setting out to do, or at least that, you know, a version of it had been done is really what I should say. You know, I didn't realize that at the time in my early 20s. I was just like, oh, someone did it. It was such a finality to it, you know, it's all it was been done. So I didn't take the nuances into account or anything like that. But yeah, I didn't write music for a good 10 years. I worked at a used record store in Harvard Square in Cambridge for quite a while. That was a great job. That was a lot of fun. That was actually still talk to people that I've known from that era. Some have released on Fishprints. some people that, yeah, Stevie Sabrisi, who I worked with on a digital single on Fishprints, them and I used to work together. We were clerks together. And my name is Blue Sky, who I put out one of his records. I first knew him as a customer, and he would ask me questions about music all the time. And then, you know, eventually let me know that he did music, actually asked me to collaborate at that time. And I said I wasn't writing. And then, like, you know, fast forward 10, 12 years, and we bump into each other on Twitter. And down that road, I end up releasing something of his, too, on the label, which is also really cool.
No Ordinary Summer. I love that album. I think that's actually how I discovered your label. I encountered it through that album. Yeah,
that's a great album to hear first off too, and to like dive into the Fishprints world. That's a Chris is just he is who he is, and that's like what you're gonna get, you know. And for a long time, we would exchange music, and I guess I didn't understand that Chris's music was Chris's music, and there wasn't anything like fancy, you know, about it. It was just, it you had to take it for what it was. And so for a while there, sending music back and forth, and there was a point where I didn't quite understand what he was doing, and then he sent me something at some point, and I just was like, okay, this guy is just doing something that other people aren't doing. This the combination is completely unique, and I should just take it for what it is. This is one of the first times I sort of did that with music in general, was Chris's music. I just was like, just sort of just listen to it, just take it on its own merits and don't like assign things to it. And it's like the heavens opened up at that point with his music and me. Like I went back into his catalog, and I'm just like streaming everything on Bandcamp and loving almost everything I hear. And there was one point where, like I said, we sent music back and forth to each other, and I believe he'd been trying to get on Fish Prince for like a year or so. And I was actually saying, it's like being honest, and I was saying, like, I can't do anything with this. Like, there are labels out there that I think can do something with this. But then he asked me, no, he sends me No Ordinary Summer. And what he normally does is he will release stuff on his Bandcamp. And he will send me stuff as sort of like, just like showing me tracks. And he sent me No Ordinary Summer. He's like, I'm going to put out this record. And, I wrote back to him. I said, this is the best thing you've ever done. This is fantastic. This is really above and beyond what I've heard you do. And then he said something like, so are you going to put it out? and of course I was just like, okay, yeah, I will.
I'm not saying no at that point.
No, of course not. And it's just like, yeah, I'll help with this one, it's I don't often get approached by people. I'm usually the one doing the asking, for releases, and so when I'm approached by someone, I will admit it throws me a little off guard, because I'm just not used to it. I'm not used to people asking me to put stuff out. But when it does happen, it's almost always, I think I might have turned down one or two people that have asked, because I have just been bowled over by what people said, what certain people have sent me as like submission, and that's like, that happened with Chris, where he just sent me this record, and I was just like, oh, this is great. You know, what are you going to do with it? You know, you're going to put it on your Bandcamp, right? And you put it out. It's just like, yeah. I made a mini disc for that one. And what's actually great about that record is that it got picked up by a British label called Tiergarten, and they put it out on a pro cassette, which I was so thrilled to hear that there's like a more mass produced version of that record out there. Still in print, you can still buy it. So it's so cool to, I mean, I don't think Fishprints had anything to do with that happening, but just to see that another label has also saw that record and said, that's a really cool record. We want something to do with that. You know, we want to help you out. Mm-hmm. I think that's just really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, having it on Fishprints definitely didn't hurt for sure.
Yeah. That mini disc sold really fast. And Chris and I both kind of went, because I mean, his music is like, a lot of people might say like Rough at the Edges or Demo or like Bedroom, you know, and it does have that. It does have the quality of like a bedroom recording, but there's just something so very real about that, you know, capturing something in your house, capturing something in your bedroom, you know, on whatever he uses to record. I don't know if it's, I believe he records in the computer. I'm not certain though, but I do know that, yeah, it's just, it's all done in this bedroom, and it's all
right.
Just like, you know, what people, like I said, they call like lo-fi. You know, but
you can hear doors slamming like in the background on that record. Yeah,
but fireworks going off too. Yeah. It's such a just a personal statement of a record. I'm so thrilled that you know, at some point in its life, I got to have something to do with it being out there, and I'm really glad that like I said, I'm really glad that Chris's music sort of brought you to the label. I think that's really. That's really astounding. That's great. Because I've known Chris, you know, like I said, Chris was a customer at the record store I worked at. So I've known him for so many years now. And that's really cool.
And then he became your friend. And
Exactly. Yeah. I guess he just a few weeks ago, I played a show with him and Steve
Scorsese,
actually. Yeah. It was really interesting to have all of us sort of in the same room making music, not together, but you know, in our individual projects. It was a really good night. It was a really good show. But yeah, I mean, yeah, it's a connection. It's a connection that goes outside of something like Twitter, you know, and that's, it's a make, you know, obviously that's more, a little more personal when you know someone in real life.
Yeah. Yeah. And like I said before, the personal touch is like a big part of what I see as the appeal and what makes Fishprints so interesting. And like your work through Petri Dish, like when I speaking of, you know, unique releases, when I hear you, especially your synth work, when I hear your playing, I can't really think of anybody else who could be playing like that. There's just sort of a haunting sort of depth to it.
I really so appreciate cool. It. That is so cool to hear. I'm at least glad that at least I think I have managed to like get some sort of stylistic thing going on. You know, I've been doing Petri Dish since 2015, and it started as just a name change away from my given name, so I could feel free to create whatever I wanted, and that's why the name Petri Dish happened. It was so I could free myself from doing dark ambient records, which is kind of funny because as Petri Dish, I've certainly made things that could be considered dark ambient, so I guess it comes full circle after all.
Yeah, it's not reducible to that though. Like, you're not just playing in a genre. Like I said before, every release feels like its own statement, feels like you're trying to say something new, finding some different way of expressing yourself. Even if you're kind of using some of the same tools, they definitely have their own character.
Thank you, for one. And yeah, I mean, I, It really is just, you know, about what I'm exploring at that moment. And, you know, of course I'll use some of the same tools. You know, Vocaloid shows up on a lot of my records. And a lot of this, you know, sampling, a lot of the sampling that I do is, can be kind of the same methods, you know, or similar methods to one to the other. You know, for Petri Dish, it really is, it is about what if. It is about what if this, you know, with Exhibition on Europa, for instance, that was very, not to break the mystique, but that was a very deliberate record. That was a real concept record, where it really was me, you know, playing with voices and pop songs and voices in pop songs and taking samples and drones and. It was, I always called it a work, you know, working title, space opera, because that's, I just pictured that aliens were performing this thing in space and they had heard an opera on, you know, an Earth opera, and they decided to recreate it on their planet. That was very conceptual, you know, and that's sort of how that one came about. You know, something like Zones is entirely of the moment. Completely of the moment. All those tracks were done live on the spot, and it's very minimal stuff added, if anything, after the session, the initial recording session. But yeah, I'm really about just, like, you know, exploring just what is possible for me to do.
Yeah, I'm just noticing
the what if.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Just sort of exploring your own potential through these releases. I just noticed that Exhibition on Europa was mastered by Angel Merkeloid.
Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, they did that mastering.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. They gave it this sort of, like, not, I don't want to say abrasive, but definitely a little more cutting than my usual mastering, which is appropriate for the record completely. You know, it's a little more, little, got a little edge, got a little bite. You know, there's a very, very, very good meeting of the minds there, deciding to go to Angel for the mastering on that.
Yeah, Angel has a very specific aesthetic. They are really able to sharpen sounds in a way that not many people are.
Yeah.
I would describe it almost like a whetstone. Like, they are able to take a whetstone to just about anything, really clean it up.
Yep. They've been doing the mastering thing for years now. So I do trust with the work, you know. It's been them and Zach Emerson, Z Doom from Doom Trip.
Oh, yeah.
Who's, you know, he's also done mastering for me. And those two. Those two are the ones that I'm like, yeah. They know what to do with Petri Dish, you know. So
I get what you're going for. Yeah, Z Doom definitely has a vision, and is able to fit, like, a lot of different styles into that vision, and, you know, help people realize their own
and on the same token, artistic goals. Yeah. Angel's vision, you know, it, talk about someone having a vision. Mastering with them is. You learn so much about audio, or, you know, they will just edge, you know, you in the direction, like, okay, I noticed this was on the track, you might not want to do that next time. it's amazing that they can hear, they can just from hearing it, you know, or, you know, just, like, tell, like, what's been done with the track already, you know, and that's having an ear, you know. But their project, I mean, Fire Tools is
fire.
you know, talk about someone when you hear it, you know it's them. You know, Angel. You know it's an Angel Merkeloid project when you hear it. There's, even though it's what seems like disparate genres, you know, coming together, they make it all their own, and it. Just throw and knocks you over.
Yeah, it really saw does.
Them,
yeah.
Saw them live once. I went to the first, the Electronicon Festival, and they played that, and it was my favorite set of the night. I don't think I've told them that, but now, if they're listening to this, they know.
They might. They might. Yeah. I've interviewed Angel before.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah. Yeah. So I might be on Angel's radar.
Well, Angel, if you're listening, Fire Tools knocked me over at Electronicon and knocked me harder over than anybody else that played that night.
That's cool. That's cool.
Yeah.
Just to kind of wrap up, if someone didn't know what Fish Prince was about, and you were trying to describe it to them, maybe not necessarily in a way that like sells them on it, but gives them, you know, an idea of what its goals are and what they could expect if they were to pick up one of your releases, like, what would you say? What is sort of the overarching encapsulating description of the label?
Now, the official label banner is Curious Sounds Past and Present. And I think that actually sums it up. It's curious sounds. And, you know, I can't say there's a genre tie. I can't say there's even some of the artists stylistically are, you know, over here and over here, you know. I guess if I had to say there's anything that tied it all together, like, you know, what someone who didn't know the label, what I would say to them, it would be forward thinking music. That sounds weird. Maybe, but it's a lot of forward thinking music, just a lot of music that is taking chances. And whether they did that 20 years ago, whether they're doing it now, it's all music, I feel, that is looking to the future in some way.
Very cool.
Yeah. Well, if anybody asks me what Fish Prince is all about, I'll tell them that exactly. I might also use your tagline, Curious Sounds, Past and Present, because I feel like that's really concise. And
it is. Cool. Yeah. Definitely fit. Definitely.
Cool. Well, Thor, we've been talking for like an hour or so.
Are you serious? Like,
yeah, for real.
Hey, that's cool.
So, yeah, I feel like I need to let you go, but Thor, thank you so much for coming on my podcast and talking with me. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on. Thank you for asking, and thank you for allowing me to talk about what I'm doing. I think it's great. I can't thank you enough.
Could you?